Welcome to episode number 346 of the Family Podcast Network. Today on Media Sucks Friday, that's right, you heard me right, we're going to talk a little bit about attachment and bonding with our kids, how it's very necessary that we get very close with our kids when they're little bitty. Treating kids differently, is it okay to treat our kids differently? Are there things that we should always treat the kids the same, always in all things, or should we be able to treat them differently? Also, parents losing their temper. What does that look like? Is that okay for a parent to lose their temper? And last, dads talking about their feelings. Is that important? Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent, there is always something we can do to take our parenting to that next level. The date today is December the 19th, 2014. It is end of the week Friday. For those of you guys out there that are like, where's Jeff? Where's the Real Family Guys podcast? For those of you guys who may not know, we typically do a show called the Real Family Guys podcast with my co-host and I, Jeff. And today we decided to do something a little bit different for you. What we're going to do is I'm just going to go ahead and knock out the second Family Podcast Network show for this week. On Friday today. And then what we wanted to do is he and I are going to actually record something over the weekend this weekend, over the 20th and 21st. So that way we can schedule that show to hammer out for you guys next Friday. So that way if you guys are in the middle of holidays, hanging out with your families, if you're traveling on the way back home, you'll have another show on Thursday so you won't be left out high and dry. So anyway, we're going to fill in the Real Family Guys podcast from this week into next week, and because normally we would take next week off with the holiday time. So you can expect to have two shows next week. We will put out one Monday as well as one on Friday with the Real Family Guys podcast. Topic for today is going to be a Media Sucks Friday. That's right. We didn't get Media Sucks Monday in today, so we're going to do our Media Sucks Friday segment today. Well, let me tell you guys, we've got some good articles here that we're going to cover. One of them is attachment and bonding with our kids, how it's important to attach to our kids, both moms and dads. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Why is that important to me right now? Because we're in a relationship with our foster daughter we're about to adopt who did not attach with her mom and dad, and we're seeing some of the struggles and the difficulties that have been very, very hard. We're going to talk some about why that's important. Also, we're going to talk about treating our kids differently, losing our temper as parents, and dads talking about their feelings. Before we get into that, guys, let's get into some quick housekeeping. If you guys want to get notified of any new episodes that come out, go to thefamilypodcast.com, right-hand side, name and email address. Make sure that you never miss out on that one episode. If you just would have heard it, it could have changed everything about your week. Guys, also don't forget to go like us on Facebook. Share this episode over on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, wherever that you guys have it. Talk to your friends about it. Every time that you guys do that, it helps grow this show by one audience member at a time. That's the way I've learned this goes. I've got to earn everybody's respect one person at a time. Every time y'all do that, y'all help me expand the show out to more people that want to get in touch with the Family Podcast and not only start doing things differently to take their parenting to that next level, but a lot of folks just want to know I'm not the only one. I'm not the only people that do it this way. Also, guys, you want to support the show, 30 cents per episode. I know the new episode looks very different, and I appreciate y'all's patience with this. Y'all can do that by going to thehemipodcast.com, clicking on PTacker. Whenever you do that, it will take you to a page that you can sign up. Whenever you do sign up with that, you for $5 a month, guys, it's super and simple as $5 a month. Whenever you do that, it helps us support the show. If you're just like, man, I really want to pay Trey for what he does and tell him thanks for what he does, consider doing that. Go to that show. The page looks a little funky right now because of the new redo with the new layout. You'll see that like the monthly PTAC is thrown off to the side in a weird spot. We are working on getting that fixed, but you can click on that and sign up for $5 a month through PayPal. It does it automatically. You can quit at any time that you want to shut it off and support the show. You say, Trey, $5 really? I mean, that's it's not very much. That is a big help. We built this show to be a low-cost show. Help us out. All right, guys. Lastly, if you have any questions, comments, topics that you want to hear, you can touch base with us in a lot of ways. You can always email us at TreyGibson@TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com. You can also touch base with us on Facebook. Several of y'all's favorite way is to contact us on the threads and Facebook, as well as the instant message. You can also go to the Contact Us page under the New to Us or New to FPN, and that has several different options that you can go there. That's our Japkin page, and say, wait, Trey, it took us off of our the Family Podcast Network. That is true, and that is what you want to do. You can send a voice message, or even leave me a file in there. All right, guys, with all of that out of the way today, let's go ahead and jump into our topic for today's, which is going to be our Media Sucks Friday. Yeah. That's right. On this edition of Media Sucks Friday, this is the day where we go through articles that either Trey finds himself or you guys send over to me. We like to cover a lot of different stuff because we're going to talk about what's relevant in the news, and we talk about how do we frame it out. There's a lot of advice that's given out there on a lot of places that tell us this is what we should do, this is what we shouldn't do. We're going to like to talk about those things here. First up on the docket today, we're going to talk just a little bit about attachment. Now, for those of you guys who have heard, we talked about this a little bit on the show on Monday. We have a foster kiddo who's about to be adopted. She's officially about to become the newest member of the Homestead Day Gibson. And anyway, she is diagnosed with something called reactive attachment disorder. Basically, real quick, I'm going to give you guys a quick, small paragraph on it. Basically, when we're born, we attach to our parents. When they pick us up, when they coo at us, when they talk to us, when they play with us, when they love on us, when they hold us, when they cuddle us, it does this really great thing to us that it causes us to attach and we feel safe. That we know that when we're going to cry as babies, that somebody's going to come get us. Some kids do not receive that. They do not get picked up. They do not get loved on. Often they don't get fed. They don't get their diaper changed when they should. They don't get fed. They don't, you know, they cry and cry and cry and nobody ever comes and picks them up. Or they constantly get yanked away from the people that they do attach to. And that is very, very difficult on kids. So they develop this condition called reactive attachment disorder, which is they are reactive to the idea of attaching to their parent. And it scares them. It really does. It absolutely scares them. And so they refuse or they avoid attachment, or they do things to deliberately push away. And I found this little article out there that was really, really good. So this is particularly beneficial for you guys that have young kids and the importance of the attachment with our kids. It's also relevant to you guys out there that are foster parents, like we are, that are in the middle of raising a kid maybe who has been yanked away from other placements that they've been in, and they have developed these kinds of symptoms. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the science that goes in behind it. It's pretty fascinating. And particularly something called oxytocin. You know, I talked about that a lot here, you know, about the ideology that goes into this attachment stuff. But I was never really aware of the chemicals that are involved with it. But the chemical is actually the chemical oxytocin. And it's a very fascinating chemical. And in that it gets released immediately whenever mamas first hear their babies cry. Oxytocin actually gets released. And it's actually what they call the cuddle hormone. And it's a hormone that actually gets released whenever we cuddle with people, and that can go on a spousal level. Whenever we cuddle with our spouses, it actually releases a chemical that makes us feel closer to people. That is the attachment hormone that we're talking about here. But we also stimulate that in our kids whenever we do certain things. And so oxytocin, a very, very neat thing. It's a neural hormone, which means it's a hormone that's created and released in the brain. It's fascinating stuff. What they've found is that it is actually related to dopamine levels and immunity strength, which I thought was very, very interesting. There is something about feeling connected and the hormones that get released that actually boosts immunity, which I think is fascinating. But the better that we feel fundamentally, whenever we feel better, in terms of our body, physiologically, when we feel better, how do we feel emotionally? Well, we're typically happier, we're healthier, we like that kind of thing, right? So fascinating stuff. So what happens whenever kids are younger, whenever they're little babies, whenever we do these things that stimulate these things in our kids, it actually helps kind of shape the future of what our kids are likely going to be when it comes to bonding with other people. And it's one of the reasons why the, you know, kids that don't have high levels of oxytocin often don't release high levels of toxin. So there is actually a physical outside of the social parameters of what happens with kids, whether there's abuse or whether there's being pulled from their homes and their foster homes and those kinds of things. There is actually a physiological reaction that happens to the body. You know, I get that question a lot, Trey. What is it? Is it genetics? Is it, you know, is it nature? Is it nurture? I mean, which one of those is it? I am of the firm belief that it is a kind of a triumvirate, and there could be more things than we know at this point. But I think they all kind of influence each other. There's the nature part of it, to where it's just the biology, the genetics, those things that predispose us to certain behaviors, attitudes, things that happen in our life, even vices like alcoholism. Yeah, I do think that plays into it. There's no doubt we see some kind of connection with that. But do I also think there's an element of the nurture piece of it, our environment and what we are in the environment? Absolutely. I think the environments that we are in can shape who we become. And if you take a kid and you stick him in a household where both mom and dad, you know, functionally struggle with alcohol, are they more likely, even if they're a foster kid who comes with no genetic disposition to it, are they more likely to struggle with you know, those kinds of alcoholism and that kind of stuff? Absolutely, I think they are. And then the last of it is the cognitive piece of it. Just what do we think? How are we thinking about things? And those three things play together over and over and over. And by that, I mean, like, what do we think about ourselves? Oh, I'm mom and dad are an alcoholic, so I'm going to be one too. Or I'm a good, you know, I'm a low life nothing, and so I don't like the way I feel, so I'm going to drink, right? Those kinds of things, that thinking affects it as well. And so, but what we're finding is that whenever kids get neglected, or whether we have these foster kiddos that are neglected, they actually do experience a physiological reaction where they don't release oxytocin at these quote-unquote normal levels. But I think we need to ask ourselves, I mean, what are some of the things we need to do, regardless of whether or not we have a foster kiddo in the household? What are some of the things that we need to be doing with our kids to cause the release of this oxytocin on the more, you know, I mean, I hate going clinical with what we're talking about here, but on the more emotional, relational level, how can we stimulate such in a kid's brain that helps us get close to them and helps us to bond with them? Well, let's talk about a few of those things that we can do, especially after we're going to start, you know, talking initially at those first few months after birth. So this is particularly for you guys who have babies right now. You just had a baby, or you've got a new baby, and you're like, okay, how do we increase the amount of attachment that we can have? Number one is mother-east vocalizations, babbling and baby talk. That's so good for kids. Even before I read this article over at Psychology Today, there have been studies on this stuff for years and years and years and years, that when we talk to our kids, make baby noises, clicking noises, when we make faces to them and those kinds of things are so good for kids. And what they're finding is guess what it releases? Guess what chemical it releases? Oxytocin. Whenever we talk to kids, when we babble and coo and all those other kind of, you know, baby talk style noises, it does a lot for their brain. Face-to-face contact. Intimate facial contact synchronizes the mother and the infant's hormone levels in almost a dance-like rhythm. I read through this article as in-depth as I could go into it, and there was some of the neurology in this that goes over my head. If you guys don't know, I love neurology, the study of the brain, and some of the stuff just goes over my understanding and desire and care of learning more about. But what I can basically understand about this is that whenever these moms make this face-to-face contact with them, that what they'll find is that the hormone levels, if one hormone level is low and one is high, like for oxytocin release, then what they'll find is they'll actually kind of synchronize themselves into a rhythm. And it's absolutely fascinating where one releases a high spike while the other one is down, and then the other one releases a high spike while the other one's down. Very, very, very fascinating that it works. But it makes perfect sense that as two people are face-to-face, that they're feeling that level of intimate contact and bonding, and the body's responding to it. Physical social play increases oxytocin in parents. Now, fascinating is that. It doesn't necessarily, physical social play doesn't necessarily release this cuddle hormone, this bonding hormone, whenever we, with our kids when we play, but it does release it in parents. So do you see how vital it is for us to play with our kids? Not for their sake, but because it draws us in closer and it helps us feel closer to them. Men particularly are big-time play partner type people. And I think that's why men often are the ones who come home and play with the kids when they get home, is because we are often the ones that seek out playmates. And that playmates is a bonding thing that we do. Now, I'm saying that under a genderized perspective here. Women, I think you need to be playing with your kids too. Actively playing with your kids and doing things with them, because it is, in effect, helping you bond with your kiddos. Breastfeeding transfers oxytocin to the infant and releases oxytocin in the mother. My wife and I are major breastfeeding advocates. We're very big on it. We're talking. Yes, it's uncomfortable. Yes. Now, I'm saying this as a dude, and I've never had a baby suck on my nipples. So I want you to hear me say here, I get it that I can't speak to this from personal experience. However, my wife and I have long, in-depth conversations. I'm going to share y'all our perspective. We believe in breastfeeding even when it hurts and whenever it gets tough. Now, we're not talking about when they get teeth. The minute a kid has teeth and bites, it's over. We don't play that game. Some people ask, well, Trey, when do you do it? Do you let them go all the way up until they're two? We've never had a kid that goes until two. However, we allow our kids to kind of wean themselves off, and we've never had a kid ever go that long before. We've never had a kid get to two, three, 4 years old that have ever wanted to. By that time, they're so interested in eating solid foods and doing what big brother and big sister are doing. I mean, they're not wanting to breastfeed anymore. There's too much going on. And so... we let kids go as long as they typically want to, but once they reach that point. However, there is a major piece to this. Whenever we have that close skin-to-skin contact, which we're going to talk about here in just a second a little more, it releases that chemical in the mom, and she passes that chemical on to the baby. So very important. If you're not breastfeeding, you're not going to not be able to bond to your kids or anything like that. There's plenty of ways that the body has adapted its way to release this chemical and get chemical release in our kids, and so you're not going to lose that. But if you can... and if you can bite down and bear through some of the issues with it, do it, because it does help you bond, help your kid bond with you. Affectionate touch. That's right. Even without breastfeeding, skin-to-skin contact is particularly effective at promoting oxytocin release. You've probably we won't go into deep in that, but it's been shown that, like, whenever you cuddle with your spouse or your girlfriend or those kinds of things, that it actually releases this exact same chemical, and it creates this feeling that you two are close, and it does the same thing with kids as well. So, you know, just remember, touching your kids, caressing them. I mean, I know that these are words that make us uncomfortable to say about our children, and I get that, I really do, but. Remember, it's about the motivation behind doing it. These things are vital. Even back, you know, like shoulder rubs. You would be surprised at how tight your kiddos get, even your little bitty babies. And just rubbing them on their skin, even massaging their little muscles and things like that is vital, a vital part. Not only to helping them relax, but it's more about the touch part of it that is so vital, helping that contact between kids and infants. And frankly, these kinds of things are good for parents as well. So all that to say, I'm gonna break this out into kind of my, you know, what is my advice to parents, especially as we're seeing what is it like to a kid that does not attach very well to people, if at all. What is that like? My advice, first off, is you guys that have new babies, make sure that you love on them, and make sure that you show them affectionate attention at young ages, cuddle, those kinds of things. Yes, even with your babies, do that. Hug your babies. It's real easy to see them as breakable and shatterable. And don't get me wrong, kids come with their own fragility. However, for the reality being, is that they're so soft-parted in terms of their ligaments and everything that hasn't calcified yet, you're not going to break them. Hug your babies. Hug them. That doesn't mean you smother them with a hug. It just means give them a good, solid hug. Love on them. Make that close contact. Caress them. Stroke their cheeks. All that other good stuff. But touch your kiddos, because it is an excellent thing. For those of you guys who have foster kids who are attachment issues, and I'm saying this again, some of this is self-seeking. This is the information that we have garnished over the last 4 months, 5 months now. Make sure that you're loving on your foster kiddos or your adoptive kiddos. Make sure that you're making physical contact with them. They often are so uncomfortable, and they do not know what to do. When we pick up our sweet tea, and she's four, and we put her in our lap, she will rigid. She will just turn almost completely rigid in her muscles. And I think it's because she doesn't know what she's doing, or it's an anticipation for an abuse that she received in the past. But we really have to work on relaxing her muscles out. But one of the better ways that we can get our kids to attach to us is to touch them, hug them, cuddle them. All right, next up on the list, we're going to talk about treating our kids differently? Is it okay to treat our kids differently? Now, this is actually one that I had somebody just ask me randomly the other day. Basically, they were saying is that, you know, my husband actually treats my two different kids, my two daughters, differently. Is it okay for him to do that? And, you know, and I'm not going to go into the story of this too in depth, but I want to break it down into two different regions. Number one, in this particular case, basically it seemed the mom was saying that it felt like no matter what the older of the two kids does, like dad never disciplines, never tries to do anything, never tries to step in, never sets boundaries. However, if the younger one did anything, even if it was small, like he would go just ape crazy on this younger kiddo and would just crack it down. And, you know, she was mentioning that, you know, I've brought it up a lot. He doesn't seem to want to do anything. I mean, he even thinks he treats them the same. And he said, anyway, her question was, how can I change him? And the answer was, you can't. You're never going to change him. And more than likely, any techniques that you do to try and change him is going to create defensiveness and probably sink him in a little bit deeper into what he's doing. Now, we talked a little bit about this particular situation, but I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. In that particular situation, I didn't have nearly enough results. I had mom's very biased opinions in this case, asking the questions. I mean, I can't make a determination based off of one person's stuff. I opened up the ability. If we wanted to sit down and visit as a group, we could. I'm pretty sure she went to the husband and he didn't want to talk. Pretty indicative that there's probably some truth to this. However, I live in South, you know, I live in the South part of the United States in Texas, and in this particular area, speaking as an experience of a guy who used to do therapy, it is not smiled upon down here. Now in the Northeast, it's, you know, thumbs up a lot, and it's, you know, it's kind of, I mean, a lot of folks have therapy, you know, therapist on retainer, like we do, you know, doctors. We have that doctor that we go see. It's very common, but down here, it's, I mean, if you're going to a therapist, it's because you're crazy. Right? There's a mentality behind it. And so anyway, you know, I made that suggestion to come to me, and I think they kind of – he saw me as therapist-y, and so there's already kind of some taboo about it as is. But regardless, I'm wondering if their mom had some truth into what she was saying. In a situation like that, let's just pretend now for a second that he really shows that type of favoritism. No, I do not necessarily agree with it. Now, you got to realize – just about everything that I say on this show goes back to one thing. What's your motivation? Now, don't get me wrong. Sexual abuse, I don't care what your freaking motivation is. There is almost no way for your motivation to be good in sexual abuse, right? So we rule stuff like that out. But there are situations, like we advocate here that we don't spank our kids, and we get amazing behavior out of our kids that have never been spanked. See, people don't like that. But do I think that there are parents that spank their kids who turn out just fine? And the answer most emphatically is yes, because the motivation behind doing it is typically to teach and to educate. They want to do that, even if I would say you're still not doing it the best way, and you're still not educating and treating them the way that I think they will turn out the best. However, because that motivation is authentically about helping the kid, which I don't think most parents is, when they're spanking their kids, they're doing it because they're angry and they want their kid to stop. However, I do think that's possible, and that's why some kids respond well. I was spanked as a child, and I turned out, quote-unquote, just fine, right? Obviously, you can become a healthy contributing to society. Let's try that again. You can become a healthy contributing member to society whenever you're spanked. So in this case, it goes all back to the motivation of this dad. If the motivation was, I understand this kid responds better than this kid does who's this way, and I understand that this kid never gets it whenever we do it this way in our discipline, and so there really is an accommodation to personality types here, I would agree. There are certain things that work that don't. If I threaten one of my kids with, you know, losing of some privilege, you know, like iPads. I refurbish iPads for, you know, as a side job. And we have, I mean, almost all of our kids have one because I bought them for cheap and refurbished them, and they love them. And all I've got to do is say, you're going to lose that if you do that. Like, their butts will fall off. And they're like, I'm done, Dad. I'm sorry, right? But I have kids that, I have certain kids, like Charlotte, for instance. She doesn't care. The little girl loves her iPad time. She loves getting on there and painting and drawing with her finger. However, if I threaten to do this, she's like, I don't care. Whatever. She's that one who would have disproven that spanking is the premier effective discipline technique. Because I can tell you, this is that kid, I can see it in her eyes, that if we spanked her, it would be a spank and then a turn around and bow her little chest up at us. I'm telling you, that's what this kid is. And so if there's an authentic ability where you're trying to tailor your responses for each one, that's one instance that I might agree with, you know, with doing something like that. If you're doing it just because one of the kids just doesn't irritate you or something like that, that's a problem. And I see that often in parenting, where there's that one or two or three or four kids, or, you know, one out of the four or one out of the two that you just have a preference to, who just irritates you less. I see it a lot in divorced couples, that often there is one kid who reminds the divorcee of their ex-spouse. And so they already have all of this built-up animosity and irritation towards this type of personality that their spouse is. Well, this is one half of the genetic alleles of that person combined with they've probably known them for X amount of time and picked up on some of their traits. And so there's already just this disposition. Everything that the kid does gets filtered through this lens of, oh, that's exactly what fill-in-the-blank so-and-so did. Oh, that's exactly like your father. Oh, that's exactly like your mother. And so when they walk into it with that, they're really just trying to vent their own frustrations, motivation. They're trying to vent their own frustrations on their kid because it reminds them of their ex-spouse. Those kind of situations are a problem. So the answer to this question is, I didn't really have enough information to answer it. However, could it be that the difference in the way they treat them is a positive thing? Sure. Is it possible that it's a very negative thing? Absolutely. But I want you to take a look at it. If you can acknowledge, or let's start here. If somebody is acknowledging in your life as a parent that you treat one kid differently than others, stop and take a serious look at that. Don't get pissy. Don't get angry. If you do get angry, chill it down. And when you're chilled out, come back and reassess it. But if you're treating your kids differently, you do need to take a close look at that. And see, because it's not going to take very long before your kids are going to become knowledgeable and socially understanding enough to be able to determine, dad treats me different than he treats brother. Mom treats me not in the same way that he treats sister. And that goes both ways. For the one that maybe gets treated, quote unquote, better, they begin to look at it and think, oh, if mom and dad treat me better, then I must be better. Right? And we don't want a kid thinking that they're better than somebody just because they got more stuff or they don't get harped on quite as much. No, they're not. People are created equal. It's what we do. It's what we be. And there's a lot of people that get treated, quote unquote, better than other people that are still horrible. We don't want our kids walking around with that fallacy in their minds, right? That's not good. And then if you look at it on the other side of that, then you've got this kid who gets treated differently, who gets treated, quote unquote, worse than the other one, who begins to ask themselves, why do I get treated worse? Am I worse? Am I more of a horrible person? And then they spend their entire life trying to prove to themselves that they're not crappy or horrible. So we have to be so very careful when we treat them differently. However, there are certain personalities that respond to things differently, that do things and handle things differently or more easily. Each one of my kids is unique in how I have to approach them. So yeah, absolutely, each one of them is different. My daughter, Anna, approaches things intellectually. All you have to do is reason with her. If A equals B and B equals C, then it stands to reason that A equals C, right? And she goes, oh yeah, if I go to my son Grant about that, he won't get that. I have to connect it on an emotional level to him. So son, if you are in a spot to where you walked in and your sister Tia came and took your iPad, how do you think that would make you feel? It'd make me feel sad. Okay, so then when Tia got up to go to the bathroom and she left her iPad sitting on the table and you came and took it, how do you think she felt? Well, I bet she felt upset. Okay, good. So if you felt upset and she felt upset, how do you think you should have... You see what I'm saying there? I have to connect it to the emotional level. With Anna, I can just say, Anna, should you ever take somebody's iPad without permission? No. Okay, should you have taken Tia's iPad? No. Boom, we're done. She goes, oh, okay, I'm sorry, Tia. Here you go. I mean, it's just a different approach. Each and every one of my kids approaches things just a little bit differently, and that's okay. The fundamental motivation in between each technique and strategy practiced is always the same. It's always the same motivation. I want to help you grow into a person who is responsible and who can go into the society and do things and contribute back to the society and see people for who and what they are. To respect those revered three, life, liberty, and property. As long as you can understand those three things, everything else will work itself out just fine. That's the things that I want in my kids and the motivation of everything that I do. Let me rephrase that. This is what Anna Martin would call the ask me how I know. Really, the reality is my hope and desire is to make everything where it is they're asking themselves those two things. I have other motivations that mix in to myself. Sometimes whenever my kids are fussing and fighting each other and me breaking it up, it's not really about helping them learn how to be better people. It's because it's irritating me, right? So whose needs am I focusing on? Well, I'm my own needs, right? So am I in the box or out of the box towards that person? Well, I'm in the box towards them because I'm focused only on what I need. So to me, in that moment, they're not little people that need to be educated in how to fight or argue better. They're people that are a problem to me, an obstacle to my quietness or whatever else, right? This happens. Ask me how I know, as Anna would say. So anyway, treating kids differently can be a bad thing, can be a good thing. But if people are telling you don't treat so-and-so the same, you need to stop and take a look at it. Because most of the time when you treat people differently, but it's the same motivation behind doing it, most of the time people are going to leave that alone. They see that. They know. They can sense that in a lot of cases. But if people are telling you that you treat one sibling different, one of your children different than the other one, really seriously, take some time to stop and think about that. Go visit with some people that you know about it. You might want to visit with your spouse about it because they probably have the best insight out of anyone you could ask. But stop and take a serious look at that. All right, next article I want to cover is an article on things to do whenever you feel your temper rising. The reality is that as parents, we have a tendency to lose our temper. And it's pretty common for everybody. I mean, it really is. Everybody gets to that point to where we just start to get tired of it. And you know, I think whenever, you know, I'm gonna go through this list because it's a good list, but I want to end it out on the most important foundational level of anger. You know, Jeff always talks frequently in his practice as a therapist that he says, you know, that really in reality, if you're getting to the point where it's anger management, you're not doing it right. It's kind of his premise. And I think he's nailed it with that, in that we spend so much time trying to mitigate the anger. We're not asking where it comes from. So it's like if you've got a river that's blasting through your or no, let's just do it this way. Let's say you had a main line rupture, a water line rupture in the middle of your town, and you've just got this deluge of water that's just billowing through the streets and it's backing up into the houses, right? It would be like if you had this happening and the water's just gushing and gushing and gushing, and you came out there and you said, well, let's do some water management here, and you threw sandbags out in your yard, right? Does it change the fact that there is still a deluge of water spilling out at the leaking point? No, it doesn't help in that in any. So we spend all these times focusing on trying to manage the anger instead of asking, why are we so pissed off all the time? Why are we so angry all the time? So I'm going to go through this list because I think it's good for us to have that, because we're just going to get to that point to where we're in the box towards our kids and we're seeing them as a problem and not as people anymore. Now they're just little irritants or, you know, little turds or whatever else. And we react to that, and we have this, and we need to know how to deal with that. But we're going to talk about, I'm going to go through this list of five and then add on my number six, because we have to get to kind of the root of what we're going through here. So number one, notice that you're starting to get swept up into the fight or flight. See, we have this little place in the middle of our brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala is where we get those reactive responses, that center core part of the brain. A lot of people call it the reptilian brain, but it's where we get that part of the brain that is our fight, flight, or freeze response, right? And so we're designed that whenever we get into tense situations, that what'll happen is our body will very instantly, almost reactionary, like when you tap your knee with something and it jumps, almost as an involuntary reflex, we are responded to deal with threats in one of three ways. Number one is that we turn around and we fight, right? Have y'all ever seen the one where the guy's sitting there and he's walking down the hall and then all of a sudden his buddy like jumps out of the trash can? And I mean, without even missing a beat, so the guy's just talking and smiling, then that dude pops out of the trash can and I mean, immediately just boom, clocks the guy right across the jaw and he tumps over. Or there's the one where the snowman is rolling through. There's like this guy hiding in a snowman and he's just rolling through and it just looks like it's an animatronic, like a robot. And he rolls up next to the guy and the guy kind of pops his head out of the top of out of the top of the snowman. And I mean, that dude just decks him, knocks him clean, knocks the snowman thing completely over into a little kid and all this stuff. See, that's the fight response. That instantaneous knee-jerk reaction of what am I going to do and pop. There's also the flight response. I don't know if you've ever seen the Facebook meme that's been floating around about the guy who dressed up his little, little quadcopter, a little four-rotored helicopter that he can fly around in this outfit to make it look like it was the Grim Reaper flying around. And I mean, I hate pranks. I really do. I've never been a prank guy. But he flies this thing around this park, and you'll see these runners jogging through, and he set it up to where it would like have this very evil, demonic, like, sound as it would come flying through, and they would see just this black, dark, floating figure coming at him that looked like the Grim Reaper. And I mean, these guys were just like, I mean, instantly they just went into these full sprints. I mean, it was a hard, fast sprint. See, that's our flight response. And then there's our freeze response, and that's whenever we get into positions to where there is no fighting and there is no fleeing, and our body will literally go into a fetal position to protect all the major organs. We typically bring our hands over our heads to cover our face, our eyes, our nose. We curl up our legs over our stomachs, which is where some other vital organs are, and we curl our chest over the rest of our major vital organs. And it basically, it's our best version of retreating to our turtle shell, like a turtle would do. And so they all have their place in survival, if you will. And so we have to be aware that our body naturally wants to go into these states whenever we're stressed. And so one of the best things that we can do when we get into these positions is put ourselves in that position where we can acknowledge, okay, I'm getting upset. For me, I am a serial yeller, as Jeff would say. I am a chronic yeller, and whenever I get frustrated, I just move to the raising my voice. For some kids, it works fine, and for other kids, it just pisses them off, and they just start, you know, doing exactly what Daddy does back. And so I can't rely on that. But it could also be things like some people just sigh. When they're getting into that mode where that fight or flight mode, they just begin to, right? They just sigh. My wife does that a lot. I mean, it could be anything from your jaw clenching to just all of a sudden you're not nobody's even seeing it, but below the surface, man, there's just those angry thoughts just bouncing around inside your head like a swarm of angry bees, you know, just all those things that are popping around. They just tear them up, you know. But being aware of what you are is important, because sometimes these situations sneak up on us and we don't even realize that our temper is going up. And when we do, now don't get me wrong, everybody finally catches the fact that my temper is raised and I'm upset with my kid or my kids for what they're doing. But we almost recognize it when it's past that point of return. So being able to see those telltale signs that, oh, I'm starting to go there. Number two is breathe. I know this one sounds dumb, and I'm not talking about the silly, goofy, you know, I don't remember if y'all remember Family Matters back in the day, but Carl, the dad, was really angry, and he supposedly went and got anger management techniques. He actually did not. But like he was chanting this 3-2-1-1-2-3. What the heck is bothering me? We played a clip of that a few years ago, or several episodes ago, but anyway, you know, this is not one of those cheese whizzy little things, right? Whenever we breathe, we increase two things. We increase the amount of oxygen that's in our body, but it actually does the other thing that's actually more important is that it releases carbon dioxide. In that release of carbon dioxide is actually a toxin in the body. So when we're breathing deep, we're actually pushing out the carbon dioxide that's in our body and releasing the toxins that are inside of our bloodstream, and it's a very, very, very good thing. It also helps you relax, because what happens is stress hormones start to flood you when you're getting upset, when your temper's starting to rise. Whenever you breathe, it actually helps a reuptake of those stress hormones back into the body. So like yoga, even though I'm not a yoga guy, yoga really does, and all the breathing apparatus type stuff that it does for you really helps put the stress away. And so being aware of what you're feeling, you know, in these sensations of anger, can help you start triggering the breathe response. Make sure that you are breathing deep. Number three, resist taking action. There is nobody in this world that I know of that does a really good job of responding to what is going on whenever they are really, really angry. There's a few people that I have met that were exceptional. And under fire, they were just, what they would say is, and it was really neat, I really admired these people. But when they were super angry or super upset, they said, I just taught myself to see the right thing clearly and just to trust it. You know, one of them was a pilot, an airline pilot for a for like American Airlines or somebody. He said, but it was kind of like whenever you're flying in fog, he said. And he said, you just have to get to that point to where you have to look at your instrumentation and you have to just trust that the instrumentation knows what it's doing because your body will freak you out. He said, I remember flying one time. We're about to land in complete fog, almost no visibility. And he said, there was a point that I thought for sure that we were tilting to the left, that we were gliding off path for our approach vector. And he said, I was freaking out, but I had to force myself to trust my instrumentation. He said, it's kind of like that. It may be for all instances. It may actually be the pilot training that helped him do that. But he could just pick the right thing, even when everything else told him that it was wrong. He could pick that right thing. So it's important to resist taking action because the reality is that if you pick the wrong thing when you're in the middle of your anger and you're in the middle of your temper raising, the reality is you're going to wind up regretting it more. That's not going to increase your ability to be more responsive, less reactive and more responsive in the future. It typically just makes it worse because you feel more like crap. So again, we have to ask ourselves, why is this? I mean, why does this happen? Why do we feel the need to take action? Well, again, it goes back to that amygdala, that fight, flight, or freeze, right? So like, if you feel the desire to lash out at him, to yell at him, to scream at him, to throw something at him, I don't know, right? What is that? That's the fight response. That's that fight response trying to decide. Maybe you feel like just getting away. You feel like running outside and slamming the door and getting in the car and driving off or, you know, sending them all to the room so that way you don't have to see them anymore, right? That's the flight, right? Or maybe you're feeling like numbing yourself, whether it's eating a pint of ice cream, right, or getting in front of a TV so that way you don't have to see or deal with any of it, right? That's the freeze response. Do you see how those three dynamics enter into our lives with our parents almost integrally? And so one of the most important things to do when we're losing our temper, when we're feeling that desire to fight, flight, or freeze, it's important to not take action in those moments. It's very important in these situations to make sure that you remember that these emotions will pass. There will reach a point where you are not so angry at this kid. And if you'll just let these instances pass, you can get back into a place where it's good. Secondarily, when you do this, who is watching you to learn everything they're going to do in their lives? Our kids are. And if they're seeing you not fight, not run away, not freeze up and numb themselves out in some other thing, then what happens is you're teaching your kids the emotional intelligence that you want them to have. When you feel this natural desire, it's ingrained, innate in all of us, fight, flight, or freeze, resist that feeling. So, so very valuable. Number four, work hard. Work hard. Guys, I'm going to emphasize this like a butt here. Work hard, work hard, work hard to see your things from your child's point of view. I don't want this to be one of those that we say, oh, that's cute. Yeah, that's probably something I should do. This is the most integral part, and it's going to be what links us up here at the number six. Six is the one I'm going to add. We're only doing five in this list. I'm going to come back with my own number six. This is one of the most important mother-freaking parts. Listen to me here. You've got to get to that point to where you can see your kid's point of view. There comes a point that if we've gotten to this mentality, I'm right, my kid's wrong, and that may very well be quote-unquote true. If you're in that mode where I'm right and you're wrong, out of those three, which one do you think you're in? Fight, flight, or freeze? I'm right and you're wrong. Right? It's the fight response. Because what happens is we now acknowledge that I'm right. I've staked my claim in this right. And I will defend, fight, I will defend my being right. Already we've moved ourselves into this position of fighting with our kids if we know for a fact that I am right. See your kids' thoughts, understand your kids' thoughts, and then don't be afraid to say, okay, what I'm hearing you say is this. I can't tell you how many arguments I've gotten into with my wife, Corey, where I've sat there and tried to defend my belief system, and we failed miserably to convince her. But I finally stopped and said, okay, what I'm hearing you say is this. No, Trey. Okay, what I'm hearing you say is this. Well, yeah, okay. So that's not it either. What I'm hearing you say is this. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And you know what, Trey? Really, I shouldn't have done that to you. I shouldn't have said this and that and that and this. I just spent 45 minutes trying to convince you of that. But what happened was I was in the fight response, which triggered my wife's fight, flight, or freeze. Now, if you guys don't know my wife very well, my wife rarely goes to the flight or the freeze. My wife's a fighter. I picked a wife who was strong. I've always, I've I've always found strong women attractive. Always have. That's the way I operate. And so I picked a strong woman, and so she fights. And what I found is that when I go in there and fight, all she does is fight back. But when I stop, don't run away, don't freeze up, don't go and try to enmesh myself in something else. When I just bring it back, do my best to understand her, 9 times out of 10, she goes, I really appreciate you saying that, and I shouldn't have said this to you. Kids are no different. Kids are no different. If we just do our best to try to understand what our kids are going through, it's so valuable. And sometimes, guys, especially in the advent of a very, difficult adoptive daughter is a good way to put it. I get how difficult this is. And sometimes my learning to see things differently is just as simple as saying something like, she's doing the best that she has ever been taught. She is making choices and decisions based off of the most crappy situations that most humans can have. And she's making decisions in this household based off of what she knows. It sucks for us. It's hard for us. But it's the best thing that she knows how. And 5, choose love. Because I want to be very careful on what I say when I say love. I do not define love as an emotion. I think the emotional component can be a part of love. But if you ask a married couple who's been married for 60, 70 years, if they feel the same way as they were when they first got married, what are they going to say? No. Does that mean they're any less in love? Well, bullcrap. No, they don't. Love is merely, by our definition here at the Homestead Day Gibson, love is doing the thing that you feel is the right thing to another person, especially when it would be easier or more gratifying to do something else, do the wrong thing. So you see that it's just a choice. It's just that choice whenever my kids are acting a fool, when they're doing what they're not supposed to, and they're not listening or whatever else, fill in the blank, I go and do the right thing for them. I go and do the right thing to them. That is the love that we're talking about. Now remember, that's not just positives. That's if my kids are, if Grant is swinging a stick at one of his younger sisters, which he doesn't do this just for the record, but if he's swinging a stick at the younger person, I'm going to go set a limit on that. Because he's hurting other people. Because if he keeps that kind of behavior up, his sister and brother are never going to want to be around him again, right? I don't want him to have that experience growing up. So sometimes we have to do these things. And yes, sometimes love isn't the warm, ushy-gushy, the emotion. It's the hard thing that I don't want to do in that moment, but I know it's the right thing. Stopping my kids from hurting other siblings or other people is the right thing to do. Do you see what I'm saying here? This stuff is so valuable in what we're talking about. So I want to end on 6. The most important piece to all of this is. So we talked about how if the deluge is moving through your house, you can sandbag your house and that's good. But how do we deal with the issues? How do we deal with the issues? And we talked about 4, work hard to see things from your child's point of view. What we're really talking about here is how do we see our kids as human beings just like us, even when they're at their worst? How do we get to that point to where even when our kids are doing the things that we do not want them to do, when they're acting a fool, when they're being turds, when they're being jerks, how do we get to that point to where we don't see them as turds or jerks or whatever else, fill in the blank, as defiant, as tantrumizing, as forgetful, as not listening, as aggressive? How do we see them as not being short-tempered? Right? How do we get to ourselves so we can see that? A big piece of what I used to do when I did therapy was helping my parents reframe how they saw their kids. In a lot of cases, they'd come up to me and say, they're defiant, and they oppose me in every case. To which we might flip that around and say, okay, so you're telling me these are the kids that are going to say no to drugs. If we can get them to understand how important that is, they'll never bend under peer pressure. These are those kids that'll stick to their guns even when everybody else tells them they're wrong, but they know for a fact that they are. Well, I guess I've never really thought about it like that, right? It's free framing. But it's one thing to teach a kid how to say that about a kid. It's another thing, how do you teach a parent how to think that about a kid, how to feel that, how to see that in their kid? It's simply about getting out of what we call here getting out of the box. Now, that's Arbinger Institute language for how do we stop seeing our kids as a problem. When our kids are throwing a temper tantrum in the middle of Walmart, we're trying to get them to shut up. Right? They're screaming and everybody's looking at us. And we know that everybody in that Walmart is thinking that is a bad parent, right? We know it deep down in our hearts, even if they're not, right? And seriously, if you can get the people at Walmart to think that about you, that's impressive. You must be doing some seriously screwy crap. But we know that's what they're thinking, right? And when our kid is in the middle of this Walmart fit, how can we see them as people? How do we see them as a person, even in the midst of these things? And it's harder than it sounds, but it's easier than it looks. Now, thanks for that euphemism, Trey. We really appreciate that. But we've got to get our spot to that point, to that spot where we see our kids out of the box. How are some of the best ways to do that? One of the things that I recommend is go find somebody who is not seeing your kid as a problem. Well, how do I do that? Who is that? More than likely, you probably don't like this person a whole lot because of the way they refer to your child. Because in the reality is, you're really kind of needing them to see them as a butthead too, to confirm that you're right about them, right? But these are those people that see your kids as sweet and wonderful no matter what. Go to them. See the things that they see in your kids. Does that say, well, Trey, they're disillusioned. Grandma and grandpa are just so disillusioned about them. They don't see them for what they really are. Hey, you know what? That may be. But listen, the way you're seeing them is not helping them either. Let's go and take a little bit of the information that grandma and grandpa have. Let's listen to it. Just go to them and say, hey, listen, I'm really having a hard time with my kid right now, with little Johnny. And I am just really frustrated with him. And I'm having a hard time not getting upset with him. But I know you do. You're in a position where you're not upset with him. Can you please just tell me how you see my kid right now? Just throw that out there. I'm not going to say a word. I just want to hear what you see. And I'll tell you guys, I've done this with my kids, with my wife. I've done this with the people that I work with that I'm having a hard time with, and I have to go sit down and say, listen, I'm in the box towards this guy or this lady, and I just help me get out of this. And they go through all the things that they see in them, or they tell me about some, maybe, you know, in some cases, maybe they'll share some tough things that person's been through these last few months. And it just, I walk out of those going, oh man, I've been such a jerk. They've had this and this and this going on, and man, they really are amazing at this, and they never forget about this, and they're always so good about that, you know. And sometimes it's just a change of heart. And keep that person on speed dial. If you need to, save that person in your phone and be ready to have Siri call them for you or something, right? Be ready to get out of the box towards people. Have those people around you that are able to help coax you out of that. Well, I wanted to go through a few more of those. Unfortunately, we're at 50 minutes now, and I want to go ahead and start wrapping it up. And we had a couple other articles I was going to throw in there. I love it whenever we go long on articles. I mean, I don't ever want to skim through these too quickly, and we can always do the other ones later. So if nothing else, guys, I sure appreciate y'all coming to join us for this episode of the Family Podcast Network. This is a very special edition Friday show of the Family Podcast Network. Don't forget to come join us this Monday. Yes, we are going to kick out a Monday show for this week, as well as a Friday show for you guys. We are going to skip Wednesday, it being the middle of the week with our holiday travels and whatnot that we're going to be doing. We're going to be having some Christmas here. Great time. I expected it. I hope you guys also remember to go enjoy this holiday. Spend time with your kids. Don't forget, spend some time being affectionate, physically affectionate with them. Help use this Christmas time to create that bonding with your kids. Even if you feel like you got a great relationship with them, you can't go wrong with those things. Also, watch your temper. Let's be honest, we're going to be around family. Kids are going to be in odd scenarios. We're going to be outside of our routine. It gets real easy to let those tempers catch up with us. So remember these five techniques as you go into this holiday. Have a great holiday. Safe travels to all of you guys. Hope you guys come back safe. Hopefully I'll get to be with a few of you guys while you're on your travels listening to this podcast. And if nothing else, we will see you guys on Monday. Have a good one.